Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 393. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. Such a fun episode for you this week. Let's get started with our guest. Chris Verdugo is the executive director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Previously, he has worked with the Miami Project to Cure Paralysis, Miami Beach's Winter Party Music Festival, the Communion Foundation, and he sat on the board of directors for the South Beach Gay Men's Chorus. Upon moving to Los Angeles in 2003, he was selected as one of two choreographers for the Miss Universe pageant. That's kind of a big deal. Then he did stints at nonprofits, including the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, Equality California, Human Rights Campaign, and GLAAD, producing Queer Lounge at Sundance for 4 years. In 2006, he joined the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles as a singer, and 5 years later, he was named Executive Director and Chief Executive Officer. We have so much ground to cover, but first, Chris, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Oh my goodness, wow, thank you for that introduction, and it's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me back, Ken, and of course, the one thing I was hoping you would omit was the Miss Universe.
You must be crazy.
No, not because I'm embarrassed about it. I just, you know, just one day without Trump would be great.
Oh, there is that. There is that.
That's where I'm coming at it from.
But it is actually illegal in some states to have a gay radio show and not mention the Miss Universe pageant if it is applicable.
Well, at least it's not illegal in the United States to have to mention the Trump administration.
There you go. Yes. There you go. We have so much ground to cover. Are you ready, sir?
I'm totally ready.
It's been 3 years since you've been on the show, but this is your trifecta. The third appearance is always a fun one.
Oh, my goodness. It's been 3 years? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, much has changed for you. We'll get to that. But first, let's go back to little Chris Verdugo. He's 18 years old. What prompted you to join the Gay Men's Chorus of South Florida?
Oh, community.
Yeah.
I mean, I can answer that, you know, in one word, community. As a little gay boy at the age of 18, not having much, if any, family support and not having a really found a gay community in college, I was looking for, you know, people who were like me, who also loved to do what I loved to do the most, which was sing. So somehow I found my way to that chorus, and it changed my life, as it changes many people's lives. I mean, I don't think there is, you know, a gay man who sings in a chorus who doesn't come in and is truly, to some extent or another, transformed by the experience.
Yeah. I would think an 18-year-old is a little bit nervous going to his first rehearsal or even to audition.
I was. But I don't know. I was, and then I was home like in, you know, 10 minutes. I was like, these are my people. You know, they were just, you know, I was surrounded by choir nerds in high school, and here I am stepping into college, and I find, you know, a gay chorus, and now I'm just surrounded by, you know, openly out gay choir nerds.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. You know, one of my favorite things about doing this show is that occasionally I pick just silly music to play guests out. And when the music comes up randomly on my phone, you know, or when I'm at the gym, whatever, I always think of that guest. And for you, it's when Corner of the Sky comes up, because I know that's your song.
That is my song. Wow, you remember that. You remember a lot. That is my song. That was my audition song. It's many people's audition songs. I only found that out later in life. Had I known, I probably would have changed it. But, but you know, it did right by me, so I can't complain. That, you know, I don't know if I've ever told you the story, and if I'm repeating myself, oh well. But I loved that show. I found that show early in life, a show being Pippin,
yeah.
and the song being Corner of the Sky, and it became my audition piece. And it just became, not just an audition piece, but it became sort of a mantra for my life, you know, because it talks about not being ordinary, about wanting to do something extraordinary, about wanting to leave an imprint in your, you know, on life, and looking for that little piece that's yours that you'll be remembered by. And it was written by Stephen Schwartz, who, of course, wrote Godspell and Wicked. And, you know, about 5 years ago, I had the opportunity to do a show with Stephen in L.A., and since then became really close friends. And it was just kind of wonderful to see how life brings those things around. Something I was so close to, I've gotten even closer to and have a new and deeper understanding for that. So
amazing. Well, when we last chatted 3 years ago, you were affiliated with the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles, filling a role there. And when you were on the show, we made some jokes about, you know, perhaps a Sharks and a Jets mentality between the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles and the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. And then I saw a status update saying that perhaps you were making a move. Walk us through that.
Well, oh my goodness, I do remember that. You know, what can I say? I've been a fan of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus for many, many years. That's not a secret. But really, the decision to move up here was very personal.
Yeah.
And last June, I was sitting on my couch. I awoke to find out about the Orlando massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And that weighed very, very heavily on me. I think to the extent that it brought me to a place in my life that I had not been to in a very, very long time, and that was the place of knowing that, yes, it is time to move on. It is time to leave the city that I've been in 14 years. It's time to leave my friends. It is time to leave this organization and start a whole new chapter in my life. Because the way that I thought about it in my head was, I have the opportunity to do something I know I need and want to do for myself, and there are 49 people who will never be able to have another opportunity, make another decision, have another choice that has been taken away from them. So it was really real for me, and if anything, I was like, if I want to honor them and honor myself, then I need to, you know, leap. And it just so happens that, you know, I leaped up to San Francisco, and I knew that they had this position open, and I reached out and I wondered if it was still open, and it was. And the rest has been history for about 9 months, and San Francisco is very different from LA. I didn't know how I would feel, and I feel at home. This is home. I'm sitting in my office looking out over the Castro. You know, and this is home. This feels like home. And this chorus is one of the tightest-knit families I have ever been a part of.
Well, let's talk about that. For those of us east of California, which is, you know, all of us, we would see perhaps these two gay choruses in San Francisco and L.A. and think, well, they must be exactly the same. But I would suspect that perhaps that's not true.
They're not true. That's not true. At their core, they are. You know, they were, I think, eight months apart in their birth. But who they are and what they represent, is very much in alignment with a lot of the other gay choruses in this country and the world. However, you know, Los Angeles has a real razzle-dazzle sort of Broadway style to it, and they have the advantages of being in Los Angeles to be able to create those kind of shows, even spectacles. I mean, they're awesome. And they, you know, they're doing another one this coming or next month with Alan Cumming. So they do fantastic shows, and I knew that coming up here was going to be very, very different. San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus is an institution. I think by the very fact that this was the first Gay Men's Chorus to exist, you know, and its first performance was on the steps of City Hall the night that Mayor Moscone and Harvey Milk were assassinated.
Wow.
The very first performance. It ingrained itself into the social fabric of this community in a way that it's not just viewed as an artistic organization, but also as an activist organization. And that's seen in the work that we do, both artistically and the opportunities we take to visit Focus on the Family when we're in Denver, to sing at to be the first chorus to sing at the Air Force Chapel outside Denver. It really has cemented itself in San Francisco as this artistic activist organization, and it is profoundly regarded. And that's something that I learned when I got here. And these boys can sing like nobody's business.
Wow.
320 of them.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And our artistic director, Tim Seelig, is a brilliant man who was with the Turtle Creek Chorale for many, many years, I think 20, 25 years, and then came here. And he, you know, he turned this chorus and this organization around and is my, you know, work husband. And we're having the time of our lives creating something spectacular here in San Francisco.
I would like to believe that the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles lovingly gave you a hard time, though.
Oh, must we dredge that up? let's just say it was hard.
Okay.
It really was hard.
I have to tell you, I'm proud of you for making that life choice. That's not something that everybody does. And look how rewarding it is. You mentioned Tim. Tim was on our show years ago. Talk to me about working with each other and how your roles complement each other. I don't know that all of our listeners would understand the difference between the executive director and the artistic director.
Oh, well, you know, I make it very easy. If this was visual, I would use my hands for this, but the artistic director conducts and the executive director signs checks.
There it is.
That's how I boil it down. But, you know, I mean, Tim, being the artistic director, handles all things artistic when it comes to, you know, production matters and what we do on stage and even the outreach in the community. And I manage from an administrative side, and we have a very successful team here at SFGMC. We are very collaborative. He and I, we've taken this project on as partners, and so we, you know, there's a lot of cross pollination that happens, and we're good with that. I think he and I have a special relationship that a lot of people recognize, and it's hard to put your finger on exactly what it is, but the fact that I think we're very much the same in some ways, and that helps us both see our strengths and our weaknesses, our opportunities for growth, as you will,
mm-hmm.
And that's really awesome, and we both come at each other from a very, I think, loving place, because our, you know, our singular focus and intention is to make this organization the greatest chorus there is, and to be sure that we continue to be a beacon in the San Francisco community, as we have been for, you know, 39 years, and we're coming up on our 40th anniversary season. So, yeah.
And one could argue that Tim is perhaps a bit of a character, so that makes things fun as well.
Oh my God, it's delightful.
I would also like to believe, by the way, that when you are signing checks, you are doing it with the same conducting flourish that Tim does.
Well, that could be said, depending on the day of the week and how much there is in the bank account.
Again, listeners, we are here with Chris Verdugo, the executive director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. I was surfing around. I learned so much about you all. Tell our listeners, what the heck is a lollipop guild?
Oh my goodness, I thought you were searching around me, and I'm like, he didn't Google me, oh my God. what is the Lollipop Guild? The Lollipop Guild is one of our four smaller ensembles. We have Vocal Minority, Swag, and Homophonics, and they each have their own sort of signature style of music that they sing. So Homophonics tends to be a little more a cappella, you know, kind of like that kind of that Pitch Perfect thing where,
yeah,
they're a cappella. Swag is swag stands for See, We Are Gay. And they do a lot of R&B, which is great. So it's really awesome to have four groups who are just so talented musically, that are able to go out into the communities and do things that the larger chorus cannot.
Right.
So that, you know, having these four ensembles allows us to be able to do anywhere upwards of 50 community performances a year. That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's
that
a lot.
A lot. I mean, I could probably tell you, I can count on two hands how many we did at GMCLA. Not our outreach, but I mean, I'm talking about our community, you know, just community performances. That's a lot. But this is what enables us to do that. And it's a program that has really been cared for and nourished. And the singers in these ensembles are fantastic.
Oh, man, this is amazing stuff. Hey, Chris, If you are free on March 12th, 2017, might I recommend to you, sir, that you attend the 11th annual Crescendo Gala presented by Foresters Financial?
Why, thank you. I may just do that.
Tell our listeners about what that night is going to be like.
Oh, boy. That night's going to be fantastic. It is our 11th annual Crescendo event. I say that because for 10 years, it was a lovely Sunday brunch. And for the first time, we are transitioning it into a gala, an evening event. And the attention to it and the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. We are sold out. I think we were sold out midweek this week and have some fantastic honorees, including the one and only Kathy Griffin, who is being honored with our inaugural Vanguard Award for all the work she has done for the LGBT community. And the work that she's done, and this isn't, I don't know that this is known as much, that she's done with veterans and the armed forces.
Yeah.
She's been fantastic and continues to be a voice and an amazing ally for our community. We're also honoring the Roseski and Garner family,
mm-hmm.
who it's a lesbian couple who have a son, Hudson, and together they have filed 3 suits in the state of Mississippi. One was to challenge the ban on gay marriage, another to challenge the ban on same-sex adoption, and most recently Susan is a plaintiff challenging HB 1523, which is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It is the most destructive anti-LGBT law that there is in the books of any state.
Wow.
And it pretty much gives people blanket permission to discriminate.
Yeah.
So these women and their son have dedicated their lives to staying in the state of Mississippi, in the town of Hattiesburg, and creating change in their community. And that was a conscious decision they made many years ago. And it's really, it's very touching, and it's very, inspiring and reinvigorating, especially right now to experience, you know, this kind of energy of people who are like, we are so determined that we could live anywhere, but we are choosing to live here. And especially when I live in cities
right.
like Los Angeles, Miami, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, you know, all of those are their own different bubbles, but they're still bubbles. And, to be able to, you know, to bring someone with this kind of insight into what is happening in those states, and also the Mississippi State Director for HRC, Rob Hill, who is also going to speak to the state of what's happening in Mississippi. And, of course, there is a reason to all of this that we are bringing these particular people to the gala, and that looks toward our Lavender Pen Tour in October. It's just going to be wonderful. Shelley Wright is performing as well.
Love.
We love Shelley Wright and telling a little bit of her story. And so, yeah, it's going to be an inspirational evening. And I would love to say go online and get tickets, but we don't have any.
Except for Ken. Correct. Okay, good. I was a little worried you were leaving that out. I haven't.
No. Except for this show is so good.
Okay. Just checking.
You can have 2.
Yeah. Wow. This is very exciting. I'm on my way. What will you be wearing? I feel like you already have it picked out.
I do, actually.
I knew it.
Why do you do this to me? Oh, my goodness. It's a beautiful sort of off-white smoking jacket with my tuxedo. It's elegant. It's a bit Great Gatsby-ish. And you know how I love to dress up.
I love it. By the way, I meant to ask, does the executive director get to sing any part he wants? I assume that is true.
He could if he had time.
Okay.
but time is quite the commodity around here, especially when you're taking on the kind of projects we have decided to take on this year and in the next year.
Yeah, you mentioned the Lavender Pen Tour. You guys are going to be hitting the road. By the way, will you be hitting the road as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Absolutely.
Okay. Tell everybody about that tour. What's the purpose? How will you measure if you have been successful in this?
That is an excellent question.
I'm a college professor. I need metrics here.
The thank you for that question. Now, obviously, we're not going to go out with surveys and ask people, you know, how'd you feel leaving the concert? Because, A, we don't have that bandwidth.
Right.
And that's really not what it's there. But I'll tell you, the purpose of this tour is twofold. It is to really empower our LGBT community in these six states, which are Mississippi, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia, and to also reach across the aisle and have serious conversations with, you know, moderate conservatives who are open to having a dialogue with us, because what we know is that we don't know what's happening there.
Right.
We are making assumptions. What we do know is what we hear and the laws that are being passed, and that's why we are going there and bringing our message of music, you know, and our stories. Because at the end of the day, music is a universal language, and music has transformational qualities, and storytelling, I think, is that thing that intangible thing that people just can really resonate with. You know, you tell your story, and someone else tells their story, and you realize our stories aren't so different. And but it's having access and having the bandwidth and the people to do that, and that's why we're taking nearly 300 singers, 220 or 230 from the Gay Men's Chorus here in San Francisco, and about 50 from the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir.
Nice.
On this trip. It's 9 days. We're going to hit six states in 9 days, do four mega concerts in Jackson, Birmingham, Knoxville, and Charlotte, and then spend the rest of our time on buses going through the going through the states and doing outreach work at churches, at schools, at Rotary clubs, having conversations with city councils, and we're taking a big team so that we're able to divide and do as much of this outreach work as possible within that, you know, within those 9 days. It's really exciting. It's really exciting, and it's a bold move that the organization made shortly after the election, and I applaud them. Our leadership got together, and we decided we could have seen out our plans to go to Mexico or Cuba or Germany, but that wasn't important.
Yeah.
It really, really wasn't. What was vital was to stay in our own backyard and take care of our own community, especially at a time, and this was, mind you, 2 days after the election, when we had no idea what would be happening. We already knew just in that moment what was occurring with states like Mississippi and HB 1523.
Right.
However, we had no idea of what this particular current climate would be, and now more than ever is obvious that we have made the right choice, and the feedback that we're getting from folks on the ground in all of these states is, we can't wait for you to get here. This is going to be monumental. You have no idea what your presence here is going to do to transform lives.
And by the way, of course you guys are going to create dialogue, but can you please pause and say how much the self-reflection for you all is going to be amazing?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
That's key.
Absolutely.
That's key.
You know, and that's what I alluded to a little bit in that, we're really looking forward to sitting down with people in these communities
yeah.
and having honest dialogue and being able to then bring back those stories to
absolutely.
Our community. I would venture to say that when we come back, there will be a musical show just waiting to happen, you know, from those experiences and stories and moments that are shared.
There it is.
It's really probably the most inspiring outreach work I think I've ever done, and I'm proud to be doing it with this chorus.
Yeah, and it's not your first day. You've done some outreach before, so this is pretty darn exciting.
You know it.
Yeah. Well, I feel confident saying that the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus will not let their 40th anniversary just, you know, go by unnoticed. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's quite correct.
Yeah.
So this is the kickoff. The tour is the kickoff for the 40th anniversary. And then we have three major concerts planned, which include our holiday concert, which is going to be sort of a best of 40 years. So that's going to be a hoot. The best of, you know, just singing-wise and production-wise. And so we're going to have a lot of fun with that. In spring, We are doing a show in collaboration with the Angel Island Foundation. I'm sure, like me, many of your listeners are not familiar with Angel Island.
Yeah.
I wasn't until I moved here. And Angel Island is, for us, what Ellis Island is on the East Coast and to New York. It was the passageway for so many immigrants from Japan and China and India and Russia. And there are stories there, and we couldn't think of a more poignant moment in this country's history than to tell the story of the immigrant, stories that have never been told, and to really shine a light on what this is. And the concert is called Echoes from Angel Island.
Oh, wow.
You know, we're having pieces commissioned. One of the pieces that's being commissioned is by Zhu Long, who is a Pulitzer Prize winner. Another piece being commissioned by our composer in residence that's basically going to be taking stories, letters that were written by refugees there, and saved while they were written for their families or just kind of journaled about what their experience was in the moment. So it's going to be very poignant, and like I said, as at a time I think where we need to hear these stories, we constantly need to hear these stories, because I'm almost afraid the drumbeat that we're hearing every day will become so commonplace.
Right, normalized.
You know,
yeah.
It's normal, exactly. Yeah. I don't even want to use that word, but, you know, you hear, okay, so it's this young person, this young girl's father, taken by ICE on her way to school. You know, you keep hearing these stories, but I'm like, are we just going to keep hearing these stories and we become numb to them?
Right.
So we're hoping that this show will really kind of illuminate the struggle of the immigrant in a way that isn't necessarily presented and can be and can be felt in a different way. So it's probably one of the most one of the largest undertakings we have taken as an organization. And then our final concert of the season is our 40th anniversary.
Oh boy!
It's a blowout, and it's sort of, I can't tell you what it is yet because it's currently being created.
Okay.
But I can tell you who's creating it.
Tell me who.
You might have heard his name over the last 5 days because he won an Oscar and he wrote When We Rise, Dustin Lance Black.
There it is.
Show for us.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. Along with, and it's being produced along with Bruce Cohen, who, produced Milk, American Beauty, Big Fish, and who's won so many Oscars, that's crazy, and who also produced When We Rise. So that will be our 40th anniversary concert next July, and it's going to be spectacular. We are totally trusting the process, but knowing the work that these two men create, we... We're not nervous at all.
I would not be. I would not be. I feel like you already have your outfit picked out for that too, but we'll get to that next year. We'll get to that.
No, but one last thing I do want to say is that we are capping our 40th anniversary by actually having a memorial place at the National AIDS Memorial Grove.
Wow.
It's going to be a bench that's inscribed. It's part one of two pieces that we plan on doing as a testament to the lives that were lost because of the AIDS crisis in this particular chorus and in all the choruses across this country. So it is something that we as an organization have wanted to do for a very long time. And so this is the first part of it. So we will have that christened, so to speak, next November on the actual date of our creation.
Wow.
The organization. Yeah, it's going to be very, very powerful and a wonderful place to go and reflect. And, you know, really, there is no AIDS memorial in this country other than, on a large scale, other than the National AIDS Memorial Goal.
Right.
So it's very powerful.
Wow, am I worried about your work-life balance in the upcoming year? But we'll talk about that, too. All right,
we'll talk about that, too, next year.
Yeah, exactly. Last question. It is a two-parter. I want you to go a little abstract on this one. You know, you've been describing in such, gosh, encouraging, and I'm just so proud of everything you guys are doing, in this great detail of specifically what the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus has been doing. But more abstractly, and here's your two-parter. Part one, why is it important that there still be a San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus? And why is it, part B, why is it important to you?
Well, first part of that question is easy to answer. We have been having a conversation about how choruses, for several years now, how choruses, gay choruses, lesbian choruses, are still relevant. Yeah, and that was an easy conversation to have over the last 8 years. That's just the truth,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we were living in almost nirvana with marriage equality and so many states having rights and striking down, you know, these anti-discriminatory laws. And now, you know, we're faced with an absolutely total different existence. This is a new reality. And more than ever, I see the relevance of gay choruses as, you know, as being able to provide both refuge, escape, mm-hmm. education, you know, and being able to continue to transform hearts and minds through the power of music. You know, more than ever, we now need to use, all of us, use our voices. And we have been using ours in protests, just like many thousands of people have around this country. And we are continuing to use them in protests through song. And more than ever, we need to be united in that. And so if I've ever thought, aside from the pandemic of HIV and AIDS, that we needed gay choruses, it's now.
It's now. Now, part B, what is this doing for you, sir?
What is it doing for me? I think it's reinvigorated me in a way that I didn't know anything else could. I was devastated on November 9th after the election, totally devastated. And, and then we had to take a step back. I think all of us had to take a step back. And some of us took that step back a little earlier. Some of us took it later. But at some point, you take that step back, and you're like, I have all this anger. I have all this frustration. I have all this hurt and pain. What do I do with that?
Yeah.
And luckily, I think for me and for us as an organization, we did that very quickly. And we're like, okay, we know how we're going to funnel this. We're going to funnel this, you know, to create as much positivity and love and support as we can. And for me, putting that kind of energy out into the world is, well, it's just kind of like corner of the sky.
There it is.
That's what I live for.
You could not have brought that full circle anymore. Listeners, this is what we need you to do. Stroll on over to SFGMC, that's SFGMC.org, to learn all about the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Obviously, there is so much excitement coming up. Also, I feel comfortable saying on behalf of Chris Verdugo, he's okay if you click on that word give and support the incredible work that they are doing. I will tell you all that just coming up pretty darn soon, right there on March 12th, 2017. I, of course, will be reporting from the 11th Annual Crescendo Gala presented by Forrester's Financial. So well-deserved, honoring incredible people and doing it in a way that creates entertainment and community. And my gosh, Chris, are you doing incredible stuff. I'm quite proud of you, sir.
Oh, thank you, Ken. Thank you so much for saying that. And I'm gonna do a shameless plug here.
Please.
When you go to our website, you will see a video. 4 minutes and watch that video. It is about the tour. It is so moving, but and it encapsulates exactly why we are doing this tour. And I don't know anyone who has seen it who has not been thoroughly moved. And find out what we're doing, and you know, support us however you can. It doesn't have to be financially. However you can to help get this message out. That's what we're looking for.
SFGMC.org. Chris, please send our best to everybody over there with the chorus. Just keep doing what you guys are doing.
I will do, Ken. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Everything has its season. Everything has its time. Show me a reason, and I'll soon show you a rhyme. Cats sit on the windowsill. Children sit in the show. Why do I feel I don't fit in anywhere I go?
Have their soul. And don't you see, I want
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. Just a little bit of a reminder, you can pre-order my book right this very second. Just head on over to Amazon, type in Ken Schneck, and it'll pop right up. It's called Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. That's my book. It's coming out on May 23rd. It was pretty exciting when the pre-sale started last week. It was number one in the gay biography section, and that was pretty darn cool. It was right ahead of The Mayor of Castro Street. And if you've never heard me say this before, let me say it again, even though I know I've said it a ton on the show in the past. The Mayor of Castro Street, which is The Life and Times of Harvey Milk, is the only book that never leaves my bedside table. It is so brilliantly written. And then there's Harvey Milk, who was a flawed hero, who people say, oh, well, he was the first out-elected official, which, yes, he was the first gay male elected official, but he didn't win in his first election. It took him a couple elections to actually win, and he persisted, and he was flawed, and the mayor of Castro Street. I got to reread that. I actually haven't read it in a few years now, but it stays on my bedside table. So while you're at Amazon, pick up The Mayor of Castro Street, but also pick up my book, Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. Let's get to the news. A trans student in Texas has filed a complaint after saying a teaching assistant rudely challenged her for using the women's bathroom. The student is filing a complaint with the Castleberry School District about the confrontation, which took place last week. According to Fox 4, the student and her mother have already spoken to the school district. The Castleberry ISD is looking into the complaint. While the teaching assistant works for the Castleberry District, the incident took place on a college campus. The exchange took place on a trip to Tarrant County College, on which the assistant was a chaperone. According to the student, she said this: "Don't start because I already have an issue with you using the women's restroom. The point is, this is the women's restroom and you're not a girl." And the student said it became very personal and it was very confrontational, and so they are investigating that complaint. One of the reasons that I bring that up is that the biggest story of the week? No, but it really does show you have to use your voice. You have to use your voice. Actually, I'll tell a little story. Just yesterday, I went to my local drugstore right after the gym, and I was wearing a Pride in the CLE shirt, and Pride in the CLE was our Cleveland Pride 2.0. If you'll recall from last year, Cleveland Pride was suddenly canceled, and Pride in the CLE took its place. It was a group of organizations, and I was just honored to have emceed that event. So I wore my Pride in the CLE shirt in the drugstore, and I bought my sundries, and I walked out to the parking lot, and a guy followed me out, and he kept calling me the F word over and over and over, and made like he was coming towards me. And the guy so clearly had mental health issues, and I don't think there's even a chance he was going to touch me, but he just kept yelling that F word over and over, that very gay slur that I don't even want to say on my own show, yelling it over and over, and I think I shouted something back, but it was nonsense. I really don't even know what I said. And I got in my car, and I thought, all right, well, whatever, you know, that's just a really deranged person. This was an unhinged person. And then I pulled up to a red light, and for some reason, that word just smacked into me, and I actually started crying. And that's it for people who know me. I know there's a lot of you listening who don't know me, but if you did know me, you will know, and you can read this in my book, that crying is just not really the way that I express myself. So it was quite significant that I was crying. And I think it really was about, gosh, people say things to other people, and it really does affect them. Obviously, physical violence is the, you know, it's a terrible, terrible thing. And as I covered on last week's show, all of these murders that have now come to light of trans women of color this year, I think it's 7 already this year. That's so terrible, right? We have to do something about that immediately. But there's also the part where words do hurt. Words absolutely do hurt. So that was my experience. And I called my friend Becca, who has co-hosted a couple episodes of this show, Is So Gay. I would say she's co-hosted 3 or 4 episodes. She came right over and all was well. That's my story, my own little tale. Let's talk about Disney. Gosh, golly. So they have the new Beauty and the Beast that's coming out. And the big story was LeFou, who is Gaston's little sidekick, is apparently gay in the movie, and now all of these different outlets are going to ban the movie, and a drive-in theater's banning it, and I guess Russia's going to ban the movie. And it just shows you kind of where we are right now. Just even portraying a gay character who in no way was being romantic with anyone else, but it's just too much. And certainly within the Disney oeuvre, that is just too much for everyone. So keep your eyes on Beauty and the Beast, I suspect. It will not be playing so much there in different parts of our country and certainly abroad. So that is happening. In Chicago, nearly 1,000 protesters rallied together for the Trans Liberation March outside of Trump Tower just a few days ago. Protesters were rallying against Donald Trump's, quote, heinous actions, that's what a lot of the signs said, against the trans community since he was instated as a president. Stephanie Scora, who helped organize the event with the Trans Liberation Collective, emphasized, quote, the need to keep trans voices at the front and center of all conversations about liberation. She then went on to say that their group should, quote, decry the heinous actions of the presidential administration in targeting trans students who are some of the most vulnerable members of our community. Here in Chicago, this direct attack on our trans siblings will not go unanswered. We will take to the streets and loudly, proudly, and fiercely make our voices heard as we struggle for our own liberation and the liberation of all oppressed people. So there you go. People raising up their voices and saying, this is not the way we will be treated. We will not be treated in this way. So that happened in Chicago. In the wonderful world of Legos. I don't know that we've ever talked about Legos before. The first lesbian who went into space will be immortalized by those Legos in its Women of NASA set. The 5 figurines revealed by the Danish toy company feature female pioneers of the American space program. This is so exciting. Scientists, engineers, and astronauts make up the set, which celebrates females in NASA. Sally Ride, who was the first American woman in space, appears in the collection. Ride came out as a lesbian in her obituary after she died in 2012. The astronaut reportedly kept her sexuality under wraps out of fear that it would negatively impact her career. Can you imagine? I know that is the reality for so many people out there, that you have to choose, not even that you feel like you have to choose, that you actually have to choose between your career and your sexual orientation. And look at the amazing things Sally Ride did, but she was not able to be her 100% true, authentic self. Maya Weinstock, a science writer, created the design which won the Lego Ideas competition. Weinstock said she included Ride in her designs because of her contributions towards science and space travel. Weinstock said this, quote, what she did to support women and girls in the STEM fields is remarkable. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. I knew I wanted to include her because she's already fairly famous, so that would help the set gain some traction, but also because of all the work she's done post-NASA to encourage young people to go into science and engineering. Weinstock described the reaction as overwhelming as she has been showered with congratulatory messages. She said this, quote, the reaction has been overwhelming. Messages of congratulations and excitement at the prospect of this set actually being on store shelves have been pouring in. So you got to keep your eyes, folks, on the toy shelves, because there is a new set of Legos that celebrates females in NASA. Very, very cool. To my home state of New Jersey, a transgender Boy Scout has been awarded $18,000 and a formal apology after he faced discrimination from the community group. The award comes after 9-year-old Joe Maldonado sued the Boy Scouts of America because the group kicked him out due to his gender identity. His mother, Christy, said, quote, Joe is happy that they admitted they were wrong. The director of communications, Effie DeLamarcos, said the organization is, quote, happy to welcome Joe and the Maldonado family back into the scouting community. As well as the financial settlement and apology, the Northern New Jersey Council agreed to create revised policies and procedures for transgender youth that fall in line with anti-discrimination laws. Maldonado joined the Cub Scouts in New Jersey last year, but was kicked out after parents of other children complained about his gender identity. Maldonado's family claimed that other children did not have a problem with Joe. Right? That's the key. That other kids had no problems. But it was parents who were upset. Joe's mother went on to say this, quote, I was in shock, upset. The kids didn't have a problem. They were all his friends. He was having fun. Not one of the kids said, "You don't belong here." And then 8-year-old Joe Maldonado himself said this, quote, "I don't know. It's just not fair. It made me mad. I had a sad face, but I wasn't crying. I'm way more angry than sad. My identity is a boy. If I was them, I would let every person in the world go in. It's right to do." The family opted to sue the Boy Scouts for kicking him out, which prompted the troop to change its policy to allow trans boys to enroll in the program. The Boy Scouts of America previously checked the birth certificate of applicants, a move which has now been dropped. Following the backtrack, Joe Maldonado was invited to rejoin the Boy Scout program, making him the first official transgender Boy Scout. He is a hero. He has gone on to be a championing voice after he labeled Donald Trump as ridiculous for his restrictive anti-trans bathroom laws. There you go. Joe Maldonado, 8 years old and already leading the fight. And leading the fight, by the way, look, this is not one of those people who's out there who's like, "I'm going to start trouble." He's 8 years old. He just wanted to do what all the other kids his age were doing, which was join the Boy Scouts. And he said, it's not okay that I don't get to join the Boy Scouts. So Joe Maldonado, now in the Boy Scouts. Love it. And quite a little bit of a settlement there. That's pretty exciting too. Speaking of Donald Trump, let's talk about Donald Trump. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a legal demand with the Trump administration to obtain a copy of a draft religious freedom order to permit anti-LGBT discrimination. A draft executive order leaked from inside the White House last month, and it would actively permit religious discrimination against LGBT people. Again, this is a priority, apparently. The leaked order would protect people who discriminate based on, quote, the belief that marriage is or should be recognized as the union of one man and one woman, or that male and female refer to an individual's immutable biological sex as objectively determined by anatomy at birth. After the document leaked and sparked immediate protests, White House officials insisted the order had been spiked, but insiders say it is still secretly being worked on and is being redrafted to make it less vulnerable to a legal challenge. After Trump's former policy chief appeared to confirm the document was still being worked on inside the administration, the American Civil Liberties Union filed a legal challenge under Freedom of Information rules demanding it be made public. I love this story. You have to use all of the powers at your disposal. And in this case, the ACLU is saying, we don't want to wait, right? We don't want to have to be reactive. We don't want to have to scramble around and figure out. It's not to say that these organizations are not already prepared, because these pieces of legislation that theoretically grant religious freedom, they exist all over the country. So the ACLU and all of these other organizations, they are prepared. But why wait until the actual order? Why not use the power at their disposal and find out, well, what is this going to say? And so that's what they're doing. The Freedom of Information requests were filed with the Departments of Health and Human Services, Labor, Justice, and Treasury, and seek any communications regarding the drafting of the order, which would attempt to grant broad religious exemptions to organizations from rules barring discrimination. Louise Melling, the deputy legal director for the ACLU, said this, quote, "The American people deserve to know whether this administration plans to protect the rights of all Americans or whether it will sanction discrimination. The ACLU fights every day to defend religious freedom, but religious freedom does not mean the right to discriminate against or harm others. If President Trump signs an executive order that authorizes discrimination against women and LGBT people, we will see him in court." That's the ACLU trying to be proactive there and using the Freedom of Information Act to find out, is there an order being worked on? Or let's at least look at the communication that has happened. Gosh, these organizations, they just do such incredible work. Such incredible work. In South Dakota, the House of Representatives in the state of South Dakota, they have passed a bill which would legalize discrimination by adoption agencies based on religious grounds. Again, they have passed a bill which would legalize discrimination by adoption agencies based on religious grounds. The bill, which is SB 149, was passed by the Senate Health and Human Services Committee last week, and last week it also passed the full Senate there in South Dakota. Gosh, I can't believe this. The bill's main sponsor, Republican Representative Stephen Haugaard, who we've talked about before, by the way. I know that name. He said it is proactive and preemptive in order to allow adoption agencies to exercise their faith, and it's not going to impact or negatively affect the good work that they've done for decades. Governor Dennis Daugaard said he would look at the bill if it comes to his desk. It has been heavily criticized by human rights advocates who say it equates to a, quote, license to discriminate based on LGBT status. It could also lead to agencies refusing to provide mental or medical health care to LGBT children. This is unbelievable. As well as this, the bill would protect agencies which refer LGBT children to conversion therapy and would mean they could not lose their license over this. Oh, man. HRC's legal director, the Human Rights Campaign's legal director, Sarah Warbelow, said this, quote, "Let's be clear, this license to discriminate proposal is a direct assault on LGBTQ South Dakotans and their families. Taxpayer money should never be used by state-funded adoption agencies to discriminate against prospective parents based on factors that have nothing to do with good parenting. This measure could have consequences not just for LGBTQ couples, but for single people, divorced people, or even those of a different faith. The South Dakota House of Representatives must reject this atrocious legislation allowing discrimination contrary to the best interests of children in desperate need of loving, caring homes." The ACLU of South Dakota, their policy director, Elizabeth Scarin, said this, quote, "This bill works against the needs of vulnerable children in the foster care system in South Dakota by denying them access to good families and important services. Our legislators must take a stand for all South Dakotans, and especially vulnerable children, and ensure that discrimination doesn't get in the way of loving families seeking to provide homes for those who don't have them." Isn't this unbelievable? It is unbelievable that this is what they are spending their time on. There are so many children who need good homes. There are so many children who need good homes. Why would we create rules that would exclude so many parents out there? And by the way, again, not just LGBT people, as well as allowing agencies to turn away LGBT people, this new legislation could also affect interfaith couples, single parents, and married couples where one or both partners have previously been divorced. The broad measure would also allow agencies to refuse to place a child with members of their extended families, which is common practice in adoptions. This latest bill is one of several pieces of anti-LGBT legislation to be introduced in the state of South Dakota. Just to remind you, and we covered this earlier this year, an anti-LGBT bathroom bill was withdrawn in the U.S. state at its first stage of the legislative process. Again, that's what they have time to be doing there. Not the economy, not education, but making sure that some people are excluded, people who are stepping up and want to adopt and provide a great home. Right? It's not like there's not a screening process. There's an extensive screening process. So when I say these are good parents, I mean they have been screened, absolutely screened. And they passed the screening. And now the state of South Dakota is passing legislation that would allow agencies to say, you know what? This child needs a home, but not with you. Not with you. We'd rather keep them in foster care. It's just, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. That is happening in South Dakota. I encourage you all, there is a very funny new Coke commercial, a Coca-Cola ad, and it has a brother and a sister fighting over the pool boy, and I encourage you to go look it up, because it's great. This is one of those things that absolutely represents how far we have come, right? That there is an ad that has a brother and sister fighting over the pool boy, that actually is progress. We want to see it all over the place. all over the place. I will just conclude with a story from Germany. The Junior Party in the ruling coalition in Germany has announced a new bid for same-sex marriage. The Social Democrats, which is the Junior Party in coalition with Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats, they announced this new bid last weekend. According to Thomas Oppermann, the parliamentary leader for the Social Democrats, the Green Party will also push for the move. He suggested to a magazine that his party would push for pardons for men convicted of historic gay sex offenses, and they hope that in the upcoming session that they will be able to push for same-sex marriage. They will at least be pushing for public debates on the issue. They said this quote, "For years, we've seen nothing but hot air from the conservatives, and now we are pushing forward." Various studies have found a majority in support of same-sex marriage in Germany, but despite this, the Christian Democrats have continuously opposed it. Officials claim they are unable to pursue reform on the issue due to the strict coalition agreement. So, even though there are reports out there that say that Germany is actually one of the gayest countries in Europe, they do not have marriage equality. But we're going to keep our eye on Germany. It's very possible that they will have marriage equality coming up soon. Exciting stuff overseas. And that, my friends, is it for this week's episode. Our huge, huge thanks to Chris Verdugo, the executive director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. They are doing such incredible work out there. Again, we all can't go. I'm not actually going. But on March 12th, 2017, that is their 11th annual Crescendo Gala presented by Foresters Financial. They will be honoring Kathy Griffin for her incredible work. They will be giving her the Vanguard Award for her achievements in LGBTQ equality and for using her voice as an agent of change in the movement. And then in addition to that, please go check out their Lavender Pen Tour. Their Lavender Pen Tour. I encourage you to go to sfgmc.org. That's sfgmc.org. That is the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Since I spoke to Chris Verdugo, I did watch the video on their website, and it really is brilliant. And I encourage you all to watch it. And that's it. That's it. You guys, go get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all those allies out there. I don't know what you do best. You do. Whether it's writing a letter to the editor, starting your own gay radio show, maybe you're going to start a chorus where you are. I encourage you to use your voice. It will make a difference. It will make you feel amazing. Get out there. Go do it. And while you're using your voice, while you're making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
She says, I smell like safety and home. I named both of her eyes forever and please don't go. I could be your morning sunrise all the time, yeah. This could be good, this could be good. I can't change, even if I try, even if I wanted to. Like kissing girls, can I call you baby?